The Berkshire Theatre Group is presenting the world premiere of playwright Shem Bitterman's The Stone Witch at the Fitzpatrick Main Stage in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. It is directed by Drama Desk and Humanities Award-winning theatre and television director Steve Zuckerman. It also features Tony Award, Golden Globe Award, Emmy Award, and Obie Award-winning actor Judd Hirsch. We should also mention he was nominated for Academy Award as well. In the play, Peter, an aspiring children's book author, is sent to the cabin of his idol Simon, played by Hirsch, a reclusive, award-winning author and illustrator of children's books, to help him finish what might be his last book. Desperate to save his own career, Peter hopes to discover the secret of Simon's genius, but first he must accept the impossible task, helping Simon confront the monsters that populate the woods inside of his own mind. For those of you who keep score at home, the first guest we ever had on this program, I believe 16 years ago, was Judd Hirsch.
Oh.
You were our first guest on the round table.
Really?
Yes.
What happened? You didn't have enough money before that?
No, you were in town for art.
Yes, of course.
Yes,
yeah, of course.
So it was it was a great pleasure, and you've been back since then, but it's very nice to have you on the program. Judd Hirsch joins us along with Rupak Jin and Kristen Griffith, and it's a great pleasure to have the three of you on the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
We're not that far away.
No, you're not that far away.
No.
I was over seeing Fiorello a couple of weeks ago, and I was watching you all were deep in rehearsal.
Yeah, we were about at the end there. Must have been in tech, I think, when Fiorello
Yeah. And it was, so it was great. So I'm excited to see the show. How's it going so far?
You wouldn't want to have visited those rehearsals, believe me.
The show's going great.
I don't want to say we didn't get along. It's just that the fact is we did.
And that doesn't make as good of a story.
No, it doesn't.
No.
No.
Which brings me not to the question I was originally going to ask you, but now I assume there have been times where you don't get along.
Well, don't get along with certain things.
Yeah.
Like production, director, writer, other actors.
Yes.
Those you can have any number of those, instances. But this one was interesting because the three of us really had to work, as our director said, to make the play something alongside of what it was. In other words, to make the play what it was going to be.
Yeah.
The play wasn't what it was going to be. The play was a suggestion of where it could go. And we had to make it probably more dynamic and more, capable of being played.
The play, one of the things in the play that Judd's character talks about is the difficulty of creation and the kind of pain, right, that it takes to create. And we sort of mirrored that in our own experience going through with the play. Judd, mostly. You've been with it for forever,
we have,
right?
The author is very giving because he that's what he wanted. He wants to have his play shaped by what happens really on stage.
Yes.
And the only thing that happens on stage is what human beings are capable of doing. Now we have a rather extraordinary human being here that we would be surprised if we met on the street anywhere. I mean, this is a guy who you don't meet in ordinary life. He's a recluse.
A great man.
Yeah, he's recluse. he has been a great man. He has had this fantastic career. He's rather old and alcoholic, but he has, as you said, the demons, right?
Yes.
The play is really about the possibility of the demons, invading the mind of a great man and what happens to him. So it's very specific. It's not about anybody. It's not about just anybody. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's about this one person and this one object, a Stone Witch.
Was it based on anyone? Because when I first read the concept and a couple of...
Loosely.
Was it Sendak?
Yeah.
Murray Sendak?
Loosely.
Yeah.
Yes. Because of the images, because of the actual things, the animals, and the slight history, For instance, he's the first children's book writer to put a naked child in a children's book.
In the Night Kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's borrowed.
Yeah.
But don't think that we're playing him only because he was very different.
Yes.
He was. I'm going to say he's very different than me. I was not a children's book writer. But I mean, it's really great. I'll tell you what's really great. To be able to inhabit the life that the author wrote. That's the hard part, by the way. The hard part is making the thing actually real. In other words, what was it like? Now, we're talking about the end of man's life. Right. We're not talking about anything in the middle.
Yes.
It's all about memory, and it's all about what happened because of what happened in his life. So what we're seeing is the result, right? Mm-hmm. A man who pretty much thinks he's going to die.
Do you at all relate to the idea of being a recluse?
I have been a recluse many times, yes. Oh, yes.
Being reclusive?
I love it. Sometimes people spoil my reclusion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like radio shows.
Pulling out, getting mine.
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to come to my house.
Not invited yet, but hope, you know, I hold hope. We still have 10 minutes. So, Rupak, tell us about your character and how you play into the story, because it's a large part of the story, obviously.
Yeah, I play Peter, who is this young, struggling, up-and-coming writer who hasn't really quite broken through yet, but he has this drive and obsession to make it happen. Simon is his idol. And so he gets an offer from Kristen's character to go up to the cabin and help him complete this book. He hasn't written anything in 12 years. And it's been an interesting challenge for, I think, Peter, of trying to get this guy to write this book. But he's this great man. There's all these, all this intimidation, right, that's getting in the way. And I hope people come see the play, because it's an interesting journey he has from becoming this sort of, I don't know, mildly sycophantic character, but and trying to figure out, well, is this guy crazy? Is this guy gonna like help him write this book? To sort of taking ownership of things and sort of coming into his own. By the end of the play, what I love about the character is he's actually a very different person. He's had a sort of hero's journey, so to speak, which has been great as an actor.
Is there an element to of what it is like to meet your what it's like to meet your idols?
Absolutely, absolutely. And look, I mean, the parallels to real life, right? You mentioned all the awards Judd has won at the top of the show. And so it's tough not, I think, for an audience to make those comparisons and for me as an actor not to make those comparisons. There were two real reasons I took this job. One, the role was so great, I couldn't say no. And two, I mean, these two cast members I'm working with are so esteemed. They've done so much in their lives. And that's definitely there. That's playing there in the background. Look, we're artists. Judd and I, our characters, we're playing artists, right? It's a funny thing to be an artist playing an artist. And I've never done that before, so it's cool.
Do you often have to work with, when you come in and do a show of exactly what Rupak just mentioned of people getting used to the fact that they're working with Judd Hirsch?
No. I'm usually the other way around. I'm usually working with a bunch of people who are, very competitive, highly competitive, because of the roles I play,
Yeah.
They're not necessarily that I always play with really young people who start. Well, I mean, one of the reasons they had me do Taxi was because I was the more staid guy, even though, they needed somebody to sort of keep the crazies down. Who they can all depend on. Remember, it said something like, they will always come to Alex. That was the that was the reason that they had the character. They will always come to Alex. And usually it's going to be the biggest pain in the you-know-what when they do.
Yeah.
So he has to deal with that. But that's where the humor came from, right?
Right.
And this is, the thing about this one is that Rupak plays this guy who really does have a future. And the challenge is he going to get through it with this man? He could have been almost destroyed, in this. And what happens is, you'd probably want to see the sequel. I would want to see the sequel only because of how it goes. It's so well written that it's not that, he emerges just simply because he's able to. It's because of the tremendous thing that he learned. First of all, he's very talented himself, which is something the old guy can't stand. It was a challenge, and then has to admit later, Peter is a guy who, the only one who was ever sent, probably, over a period of 12 years, to help him write, who he had to sort of like dismiss. He probably destroyed all of them, you mm-hmm. know. The only one that came in with a great deal of talent and a book called The Stone Witch. That's kind of like, that's shivering, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then it ends with a guy who goes through this whole thing and then comes out staying at the same place that the man died in, okay?
So there's a lot going on. Kristen, talk a little bit about your role and how you enter into this equation between these two
men.
Yes.
Well, I'm the grown-up in the room who holds these guys to to his deadlines and needs the book. I mean, the editor, she's been Simon's editor for years and years and years, and she is drawn to talent and to representing the talent. And I mean, she just has to, hold their feet to the fire to get this stuff done. I mean, it's the grown-up side of it, of art, and to allow the artist to have the freedom to create, somebody has to manage them and bring them forward,
Mm-hmm.
The editors, the agents, and then she also dallies in a few little love affairs on the way with, her people.
By the way, this is all in 90 minutes.
It is. It's a packed 90 minutes.
It's a blistering pace.
That's a lot going on in 90 minutes.
It's a very full 90 minutes, and I think the houses have...
It's like seven scenes, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And they're not all short.
And there's manifestations of other characters who are not actually tangible. Intangible characters,
yeah.
I guess?
Yeah.
What do you call them?
There are sort of two or three things about doing a play like this. And one is creating an image that isn't there, creating a reason for something to occur, and creating a character that you don't know exactly the whole history of.
Right.
In other words, it's almost like seeing a walking attitude that you walk in as there's an attitude walking around out there. You go like this, right. What's wrong with this guy? What's happened to this life? He's 80 years old. You know what I mean? He has to have had such a history, and he hasn't written anything in 12 years. And we realize we're walking into the middle of a long period of him struggling with demons. Mm. Now, yes, he's alcoholic, but we have to understand that's how someone gets to be that way. You know what I mean? It's not like we would never say, he must have been that way all his life. No. It's this agony of creation. You see, the author really wants to show a very inside view of writers and artists. In other words, this whole thing is about creative people. It's not about walk-a-day people in life.
Yeah.
It can't be understood that way. The whole lesson of the whole thing is not a lesson of life. It's a lesson of art. And thank God he wrote the thing that gives Peter the chance to realize the enormous lesson. And the man who taught him, me, was not a person who overlooked the idea, but only through agony gave him the reason to go on. You know what I mean? I mean, sometimes in life we need somebody who actually tells us something,
right.
Even though we might be great, we wouldn't know it or good. You know, we always need some kind of inspirer. I always think fathers are supposed to be that way,
right, push.
Fathers and mothers, we get a chance. I'm telling you, though, creative people can if they get that chance in their life when they think they know that they're good or that they know something, but have somebody else say, "You want to know something?
Mm-hmm.
You really do, and you really should know that you could do this thing." Instead of saying, "I wonder how good I really am," But I went to art school for about a year, and the only thing I could think of was, I can never be Van Gogh. I can never be Matisse. I can't be any of them. So I said, "So why stay?" You know what I mean?
Oh, that's a great point, actually. I mean, the whole lesson of valuing yourself. I mean, as artists, frankly, most of us, at least, I think, are fairly insecure people. Maybe I'll just speak for myself. But that journey towards valuing yourself as an artist, as a person, I think the younger folks in the audience, certainly, and maybe even those older, are going to get that if they come watch the play.
Yeah, right.
What do you look for in a role? To give up your summer and say, okay, I want to work on this, what has to be there for you, Jed?
About something worthwhile, something that I thought of my that I was kind of like interested in myself, whether if I never even saw the play, mm-hmm. you know, or the work. It kind of makes a light bulb go on, you know. I mean, I take, you know, it's almost like, what did you ever have your opinions about in life, right? Well, politics, art, sports, whatever. You always had opinions about these things. Now, take the ones you had the strongest ones about and never really, had a way of expressing them. And then someone writes something, and it's right down the line of what you always wondered about or actually had an opinion about or actually, you know, stressed about. And I always, as I said, I went to art school, and I always wondered, how do these guys do this? I mean, why do we consider them great? Oh, I know why we do. I look. I see. I have eyes. I go to the museum, and I keep on saying, how did they do it? How did they do it? What was their life like to do it? Now, we know Van Gogh's story, right? We know the tragic story of that man. But look at the damn thing he did.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't get away from it. Nobody did it. Only he did that. Mm. At that moment, only he did that. And he couldn't even stick around to get the benefit of it, you know? Isn't it amazing? We could sell his work for millions of dollars.
Yeah, no.
Not to mention the sequel.
Right.
Yeah.
But this, as you said, this is, it's like the most worthwhile thing that's come along for me as far as the stage is concerned. You know, I've done a lot of plays, and many of them were because I kind of knew the author or the director, or it was like, oh, come on, just do this for us.
Yes.
You know? And, you know, this one was something that I actually chose and said, if it's going to be good, let's do it. You know, and that's exactly what we did. We came in, we took this massive script, and we said, let's break it down and see really what counts. What counts? Her part, Kristen's part, has to be worthwhile to the character, and so is his, and so does mine. In other words, something, their desire has to be a worthy one.
Yeah.
Okay? You make the desire worthy. Man, I'm telling you, you got a good play, you know?
Bob Newhart told me a story about you years ago.
He did not.
Yes, he did. And it was great because, and I've never forgotten it. And it was great because the two of you were in a show called George and Leo.
Mm.
And he said that that it had a 13-week run. And
no, was, 20.
Well, 20. But it was, it was within the first 13 weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe 7 or 8 episodes in, the two of you were sitting together in lobster suits. And you turned, and Bob Newhart said to me, and he said, you turned to him and you said, you know, usually this happens in the 7th season, but if we're in a lobster suit in the 7th episode, I don't think we're going to get picked up.
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah.
And I told that to the producers. Yeah. I actually said that, you know. I had a nice little conversation with them, and I said, you do realize, you know, that you're not writing this show anymore. I mean, Bob never heard me say this. I said, you're writing the next Bob Newhart show, and even he doesn't like it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He just came off a really bad one where he had to play the opposite of himself.
Right.
He played a nasty man. And this one, he was the nicest guy in the world. He was also the nicest man in the world because I had to go home every weekend. I had a kid that I had to see. And he'd get out there and he'd say, what time is your plane? He said, okay, let's make this one fast, okay? And he goes out, he talks to the audience, and he comes back and he says, oh, we're going to make it. Don't worry about it. We get into the middle of it, and he said, we have to go. Judd has to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It and it's amazing. It talks a little bit about what we were talking about earlier in chemistry, but you have two of the biggest stars of television in one show, and you think, well, this has to be a hit. How could they screw this up?
Well, you have a couple of hours.
Yeah, right.
I can tell you how they could screw up any show. You know, I've been in a couple of those also.
But you don't know before you sign and say, all right, I'm in for the first season.
Sometimes a network can step in and actually try to fix something and screw it up. Sometimes they can step in and try to fix something and really do the right thing. And sometimes what they say is we sold this to these writers, and that's what we're going with. And they can watch the sled slide down the hill and crash into the biggest snowbank. But, I mean, there's many ways these things fail, many.
So you have a show now that is getting wonderful reviews. You're on stage through August 20th, and it is a wonderful piece of work. So I assume you're you're proud of that.
Well, yeah, we all are. I mean,
Yeah, we are.
I mean, I've never saw such as
it's a beautiful show.
Eager
too.
Faces of all of us before we go on. I mean, I think there's like this. Oh, this is going to be something tonight. I doubt we're going to do. We're going to do one show that we think we've ever done before. You know,
yeah.
I don't think any one of these shows is going to sound like, feel like, or be like. And it has nothing to do with the audience. It's how we want, what we want to do that night.
Yeah. It's a joy to play the show. I mean, it really is a joy to play it. I mean, in some shows you do, and you have to really haul it up every night to get out there. But this is really a fun show. You get on the road and you go, and it's fun to play.
And there's still things to explore. For.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, gosh, there's always things
to
explore.
If there weren't, I think it would be dangerous.
Yeah.
And I have a note to all actors who do these things, right? Look in the faces of your other actor. And find out what they're looking for. Find out what they're about. Find out what they're actually doing. Because they can't go off script to tell you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But find out. I mean, many times we've done scenes and I realize that this person is saying something to me that they mean in a certain way and I'm either understanding it or not. And that becomes part of it. In other words, you could play, I'm questioning, what the hell are you talking about? Or I can say, I got what you mean and be completely wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
You can choose it. You can choose every night to say something that's either right, wrong, but you get it from the other person. You know, of course, you have the story going in your head.
And you have the opportunity of thinking of something else.
That's right. That's right. And I think that's how shows could be. And our author just loves the idea that the damn thing changes.
Shem Bitterman is the playwright. The play is The Stone Witch. It plays at the Fitzpatrick Main Stage in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, part of the Berkshire Theater Group. It runs now through August 20th. You can visit berkshiretheatergroup.org for showtime and ticket information. That link will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. Again, The Stone Witch through August 20th. Judd Hirsch, Roop Hochgin, and Kristen Griffith, I thank you all for being here and have a great rest of the run. What a delight
thank
to have you all here
thank
this morning.
You.
Thank you very much.
Thank
great
you. To be here.
Yes.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.